37. The last time we march. You mustn't worry yourself about race. It is a pity about Iona and Sky, but they were foolish, violating our pact from the very beginning. Numuhuku Makiakia I Alunamor had always been taught that the first rule of warfare was to know your enemy. One might assume that such lessons weren't terribly relevant in his life anymore. Fortunately, making a good stew was a lot like going to war. Lunamore, called Rock by his friends, on account of their thick lowlander tongues being incapable of proper speech, stirred his cauldron with an enormous wooden spoon the size of a longsword. A fire burned rockbud husks underneath, and a playful wind spren whipped at the smoke, making it blow across him no matter where he stood. He had placed the cauldron on a plateau of the shattered plains, and, beautiful lights and fallen stars, he was surprised to discover that he had missed this place. Who would have thought he could become fond of this barren, windswept flatland? His homeland was a place of extremes, bitter ice, powdery snow, boiling heat, and blessed humidity. Down here, everything was so moderate, and the shattered plains were the worst of all. In Yakaved, he'd found vine-covered valleys. In Alethkar, they had fields of grain, rock buds spreading endlessly like the bubbles of a boiling cauldron. Then the shattered plains, endless, empty plateaus with barely anything growing on them. Strangely, he loved them. Lunamore hummed softly as he stirred with two hands, churning the stew and keeping the bottom from burning. When the smoke wasn't in his face, this cursed too-thick wind had too much air to behave properly, he could smell the scent of the shattered plains. An open scent. The scent of a high sky and baking stones, but spiced by the hint of life in the chasms. Like a pinch of salt. Humid, alive with the odors of plants and rot intermingling. In those chasms, Lunamore had found himself again after a long time being lost. Renewed life, renewed purpose. And stew. Lunamore tasted his stew, using a fresh spoon, of course, as he wasn't a barbarian like some of these lowlander cooks. The longroots still had further to cook before he could add the meat. Real meat from finger crabs he'd spent all night shelling. Couldn't cook that too long or it got rubbery. The rest of Bridge Four stood arrayed on the plateau, listening to Kaladin. Lunamore had set up so that his back was toward Narok, the city at the center of the shattered plains. Nearby, one of the plateaus flashed as Renarin Kolin worked the Oath Gate. Lunamore tried not to be distracted by that. He wanted to look out westward, toward the old war camps. Not much longer now to wait, he thought. But don't dwell on that. The stew needs more crushed limb. I trained many of you in the chasms, Kaladin said. The men of Bridge Four had been augmented by some members of the other bridge crews and even a couple of soldiers that Dalinar had suggested for training. The group of five scout women was surprising, but who was Lunamore to judge? I could train people in the spear, Kaladin continued, because I myself had been trained in the spear. What we're attempting today is different. I barely understand how I learned to use Stormlight. We're going to have to stumble through this together.
It's all good, Goncho, Lopin called. How hard can it be to learn how to fly? Sky eels do it all the time, and they are ugly and stupid. Most bridgemen are only one of those things.
Kaladin stopped in line near Lopin. The captain seemed in good spirits today, for which Lunamore took credit. He had, after all, made Kaladin's breakfast. The first step will be to speak the ideal, Kaladin said. I suspect a few of you have already said it. But for the rest, if you wish to be a squire to the Windrunners, you will need to swear it. They began belting out the words. Everyone knew the right ones by now. Lunamore whispered the ideal.
Life before death, strength before weakness,
Journey before destination. Kaladin handed Lopin a pouch full of gemstones. The real test and proof of your squireship will be learning to draw stormlight into yourselves. A few of you have learned it already. Lopin started glowing immediately. And they will help the rest learn. Lopin, take first, second, and third squads. Sigzil, you've got fourth, fifth, and sixth. Pete, don't think I haven't seen you glowing. You take the other bridgemen. And Teft, you take the scouts and... Kaladin looked around. Where is Teft? He was only just noticing. Lunamore loved their captain, but he got distracted sometimes. Maybe air sickness.
Teft didn't come back to the barracks last night, sir, Layton called, looking uncomfortable.
Fine, I'll help the scouts. Lopin, Sigzil, Pete, talk your squads through how to draw in stormlight. Before the day is done, I want everyone on this plateau glowing like they swallowed a lantern.
They broke up, obviously eager. Translucent red streamers rose from the stone, whipping as if in the wind, one end connected to the ground. Anticipation sprang. Lunamore gave them the sign of respect, hand to his shoulder, then his forehead. These were lesser gods, but still holy. He could see their true shapes beyond the streamers, a faint shadow of a larger creature at the bottom. Lunamore handed off his stirring to Dabid. The young bridgeman didn't talk, and hadn't since Lunamore had helped Kaladin pull him from the battlefield. He could stir, though, and run water skins. He had become something of an unofficial mascot for the team, as he'd been the first bridgeman that Kaladin had saved. When bridgemen passed Dabid, they gave a subtle salute. Huio was on kitchen duty with Lunamore today, as was becoming more common. Huio requested it, and the others avoided it. The squat, beefy Herdazian man was humming softly to himself as he stirred the shiki, a brownish horn-eater drink that Lunamore had chilled overnight in metal bins on the plateau outside Urethiru. Strangely, Huio took a handful of lasbo from a pot and sprinkled it into the liquid.
"What are you doing, crazy man?"
Lunamore bellowed, stomping up.
"Lasbo? In drink? That thing is spicy powder, airsick lowlander."
Huio said something in Herdazian.
"Bah,"
Lunamore said.
"I do not speak this crazy language you use. Lopin, come here and talk to this cousin you have. He is ruining our drinks."
Lopin, however, was gesturing wildly at the sky and talking about how he'd stuck himself to the ceiling earlier. Lunamore grunted and looked back at Huio, who proffered a spoon dripping with liquid.
"Air sick fool," Lunamore said, taking a sip. "You will ruin..."
Blessed gods of sea and stone, that was good.
The spice added just the right kick to the chilled drink, combining flavors in a completely unexpected yet somehow complimentary way. Huio smiled.
"Bridge four," he said in thickly accented Alethi.
"You are lucky man," Lunamore said, pointing. "I will not kill you today."
He took another sip, then gestured with the spoon.
"Go do this thing to other bins of Shiki."
Now where was Haber? The lanky, gap-toothed man couldn't be too far away. That was one advantage of having an assistant chef who could not walk. He usually stayed where you put him.
"Watch me now, carefully,"
Lopin said to his group, stormlight puffing from his mouth as he spoke.
"All right, here it is. I, the Lopin, will now fly. You may applaud as you feel is appropriate."
He jumped up and then crashed back to the plateau.
"Lopin," Kaladin called. "You're supposed to be helping the others, not showing off." "Sorry, gone," Lopin said.
He quivered on the ground, his face pressed to the stone, and didn't rise.
Did you stick yourself to the ground?" Kaladin asked. "Just part of the plan, Gon," Lopin called back. "If I am to become a delicate cloud upon the sky, I must first convince the ground that I am not abandoning her." Like a worried lover, sure, she must be comforted and reassured that I will return following my dramatic and regal ascent to the sky.
You're not a king, Lopin, Drey said. We've been over this.
Of course I am not. I am a former king. You are obviously one of the stupid ones I mentioned earlier.
Lunamore grunted in amusement and rounded his little cooking station toward Haber, who he now remembered was peeling tubers by the side of the plateau. Lunamore slowed. Why was Kaladin kneeling before Haber's stool, holding out a gemstone?
Ah, Lunamore thought. I had to breathe to draw it in, Kaladin explained softly. I'd been doing it unconsciously for weeks, maybe months, before Teft explained the truth to me.
Sir, Haber said, I don't know if... I mean, sir, I'm no Radiant. I was never that good with the spear. I'm barely a passable cook.
Passable was a stretch. But he was earnest and helpful, so Lunamore was happy to have him. Besides, he needed a job he could do sitting. A month back, the assassin in white had swept through the king's palace at the war camps trying to kill Elokar, and the attack had left Haber with dead legs. Kaladin folded the gemstone in Haber's fingers.
Just try, the captain said softly. Being a Radiant isn't so much about your strength or skill, but about your heart. And yours is the best of all of us.
The captain seemed intimidating to many outsiders, a perpetual storm for an expression, an intensity that made men wilt when it turned on them. But there was also an astonishing tenderness to this man. Kaladin gripped Haber on the arm and almost seemed to be tearing up. Some days it seemed you couldn't break Kaladin Stormblessed with all the stones on Roshar. Then one of his men would get wounded, and you'd see him crack. Kaladin headed back toward the scouts he'd been helping, and Lunamore jogged to catch up. He bowed to the little god who rode on the bridge captain's shoulder, then asked,
You think Haber can do this thing, Kaladin?
I'm sure he can. I'm sure all of Bridge Four can, and perhaps some of these others.
Huh, Lunamore said. Finding a smile on your face, Kaladin Stormblessed, is like finding lost sphere in your soup. Surprising, yes, but very nice too. Come, I have drink you must try.
I need to get back to...
Come, drink you must try.
Lunamore guided him to the big pot of shiki and poured him a cup. Kaladin slurped it down.
Hey, that's pretty good, Rock.
Is not my recipe, Lunamore said. Huyo has changed this thing. I now have to either promote him or push him offside of plateau.
Promote him to what? Kaladin asked, getting himself another cup.
To Airsick Lowlander, Lunamore said. Second class.
You might be too fond of that term, Rock.
Nearby, Lopin talked to the ground, against which he was still pressed.
Don't worry, dear one. The Lopin is vast enough to be possessed by many, many forces, both terrestrial and celestial. I must soar to the air, for if I were to remain only on the ground, surely my growing magnitude would cause the land to crack and break.
Lunamore looked to Kaladin.
I am fond of term, yes. But only because this thing has an astounding number of applications among you.
Kaladin grinned, sipping his shiki and watching the men. Farther along the plateau, Drahi suddenly raised his long arms and called out,
Ha!
He was glowing with stormlight. Bissig soon followed. That should fix his hand. He too had been injured by the assassin in white.
This will work, Rock, Kaladin said.
The men have been close to the power for months now, and once they have it, they'll be able to heal. I won't have to go into battle worrying which of you I'll lose.
Kaladin, Lunamore said softly, this thing we have begun, it is still war. Men will die.
Bridge Four will be protected by their power.
And the enemy, they will not have power.
He stepped closer.
Surely I do not wish to dampen Kaladin Stormblessed when he is optimistic. but nobody is ever perfectly safe. This is sad truth, my friend.
Maybe, Kaladin admitted. He got a distant look on his face. Your people only let younger sons go to war, right?
Only Twanalekina, fourth son and younger, can be wasted in war. First, second, and third sons are too valuable.
Fourth son and younger, so hardly ever.
Huh? You do not know the size of Oneida families.
Still, it has to mean fewer men dying in battle.
Peaks are different place, Lunamore said,
smiling at Silfrenna as she rose off Kaladin's shoulder and started dancing on the nearby winds.
And not just because we have right amount of air for brains to work. To attack another peak is costly and difficult, requiring much preparation and time. We speak of this thing more than we do him.
Sounds nice.
You will visit with me someday, Lunamore said. You and all Bridge Four, as you are family now.
Ground, Lopin insisted. I will still love you. I'm not attracted to anyone the way I am to you. Whenever I leave, I'll come right back.
Kaladin glanced at Lunamore.
Perhaps, Lunamore noted, when that one is away from too much toxic air, he will be less...
Lopin?
Though upon consideration, this thing would be sad.
Kaladin chuckled, handing Lunamore his cup. Then he leaned in. What happened to your brother, Rock?
My two brothers are well, so far as I know.
And the third brother? Kaladin said. The one who died, moving you from fourth to third and making you a cook instead of a soldier?
Don't deny it. His sad story, Lunamore said. And today is not day for sad stories. Today is day for laughter, stew, flight, these things.
And hopefully something even grander. Kaladin patted him on the shoulder.
If you ever need to talk, I'm here. That is good to know. Though today, I believe someone else wishes to talk.
Lunamore nodded toward someone crossing a bridge onto their plateau. A figure in a stiff blue uniform with a silver circlet on his head.
The king has been eager to speak with you. Huh? Asked us several times if we knew when you would return. As if we are appointment keepers for our glorious flying leader.
Yes, Kaladin said. He came to see me the other day. Kaladin braced himself visibly, setting his jaw, then walked to the king, who had just marched onto the plateau, trailed by a cluster of guards from Bridge 11. Lunamore positioned himself, working on the soup where he could listen, as he was curious.
Windrunner, Elikar said, nodding to Kaladin. It seems you are right. Your men have had their powers restored. How soon will they be ready?
They're in fighting shape already, Your Majesty, but to master their powers... Well, I can't say, honestly.
Lunamore sipped his soup and didn't turn toward the king, but stirred and listened.
Have you given thought to my request? Elikar said. Will you fly me to Kolinar, so we can reclaim the city?
I'll do as my commander tells me.
No, Elikar said. I'm asking you personally. Will you come? Will you help me reclaim our homeland?
Yes, Kaladin said softly. Give me some time, a few weeks at least, to train my men. I prefer to bring a few Squire Windrunners with us, and if we're lucky, I might be able to leave a full Radiant behind to lead if something happens to me. But either way, yes, Elikar. I'll go with you to Alethkar.
Good. We have some time, as Uncle wishes to try contacting people in Kolinar using his visions. Perhaps 20 days? Can you train your squires in that time?
I'll have to, Your Majesty.
Lunamore glanced at the king, who folded his arms, watching the Windrunners, prospective and current. He seemed to have come not just to speak with Kaladin, but to watch the training. Kaladin walked back to the scouts, his god following in the air after him. So Lunamore brought the king something to drink. Then he hesitated beside the bridge that Elikar had crossed to reach this plateau. Their old bridge from the bridge runs had been repurposed for moving people around these plateaus closest to Narok. Permanent bridges were still being reconstructed. Lunamore patted the wood. They'd thought this lost, but a salvage party had discovered it wedged in a chasm a short distance away. Dalinar had agreed to have it hauled up at Teft's request. Considering what it had been through, the old bridge was in good shape. It was made of tough wood, Bridge 4 was. He looked beyond it and was unsettled by the sight of the next plateau over, or the rubble of it. A stump of a plateau, made of broken rock that extended only 20 feet or so from the chasm floor. Relaine said that had been an ordinary plateau before the meeting of Everstorm and Highstorm at the Battle of Narok. During that terrible cataclysm when storms met, entire plateaus had been ripped up and shattered. Though the Everstorm had returned several times, the two storms had not again met over a populated area. Lunamore patted the old bridge, then shook his head, walking back toward his cooking station. They could have trained at Yuathiru, perhaps, but none of the bridgemen had complained at coming here. The shattered plains were far better than the lonesome plain before the tower. This place was just as barren, but it was also theirs. They also hadn't questioned when Lunamore had decided to bring along his cauldrons and supplies to make lunch. It was inefficient, true, but a hot meal would make up for it, and beyond that, there was an unspoken rule. Though Lunamore, Dabbit, and Haber didn't participate in the training or sparring, they were still Bridge 4. They went where the others went. He had Huyo add the meat, with a strict charge to ask before changing any spices. Dabbit continued to stir placidly. He seemed content, though it was hard to tell with that one. Lunamore washed his hands in a pot, then got to work on the bread. Cooking was like warfare. You had to know your enemy, though his enemies in this contest were his friends. They came to each meal expecting greatness, and Lunamore fought to prove himself time and time again. He waged war with breads and soups, sating appetites and satisfying stomachs. As he worked, hands deep within the dough, he could hear his mother's humming, her careful instructions. Kaladin was wrong. Lunamore hadn't become a cook. He'd always been one since he could toddle up the step stool to the counter and stick his fingers in the sticky dough. Yes, he'd once trained with a bow, but soldiers needed to eat, and Nuatoma guards each did several jobs, even guards with his particular heritage and blessings. He closed his eyes, kneading and humming his mother's song to a beat he could almost barely, just faintly hear. A short time later, he heard soft footsteps crossing the bridge behind. Prince Renarin stopped beside the cauldron, his duty of transferring people through the Oath Gate finished for now. On the plateau, more than a third of Bridge 4 had figured out how to draw in Stormlight, but none of the newcomers had managed it, despite Kaladin's coaching. Renarin watched with flushed cheeks. He'd obviously run to get here once released from his other duty, but now he was hesitant. Elikar had set up to watch near some rocks, and Renarin stepped toward him as if sitting at the side and watching was his place, too.
"Hey,"
Lunamore said.
"Renarin!"
Renarin jumped. The boy wore his blue Bridge 4 uniform, though his seemed somehow neater than the others.
"I could use some help with this bread," Lunamore said.
Renarin smiled immediately. All the youth ever wanted was to be treated like the rest of them. Well, that attitude benefited a man. Lunamore would have the High Prince himself kneading dough if he could get away with it. Dalinar seemed like he could use a good session of making bread. Renarin washed his hands, then sat on the ground across from Lunamore and followed his lead. Lunamore ripped off a piece of dough about as wide as his hand, flattened it, then slapped it against one of the large stones he'd put to warm by the fire. The dough stuck to the stone, where it would cook until one peeled it off. Lunamore didn't push Renarin to talk. Some people you wanted to press, draw them out. Others you wanted to let move at their own pace. like the difference between a stew you brought to a boil and one you kept at a simmer.
But where is his god?
Lunamore could see all Spren. Prince Renarin had bonded one, except Lunamore had never been able to spot it. He bowed when Renarin wasn't looking, just in case, and made a sign of reverence to the hidden god.
Bridge Four is doing well, Renarin finally said. He'll have them all drinking Stormlight soon.
Like Lysaux, Lunamore said.
Ha! But they have much time until they catch up to you. Truth Watcher is good name. More people should watch truth instead of lies.
Renarin blushed.
I suppose it means I can't be in Bridge Four anymore, doesn't it?
Why not?
I'm a different order of Radiant, Renarin said,
eyes down as he formed a perfectly round piece of dough, then carefully set it onto a stone.
You have power to heal.
The surges of progression and illumination. I'm not sure how to make the second one work, though. Shallan has explained it 7 times, but I can't create even the smallest illusion. Something's wrong.
Still, only healing for now? This thing will be very useful to Bridge Four.
I can't be Bridge Four anymore.
That is nonsense. Bridge Four is not Windrunners.
Then what is it?
It is us, Lunamore said. It is me. It is them. It is you.
He nodded toward David.
That one. He will never hold spear again. He will not fly, but he is Bridge Four. I am forbidden to fight, but I am Bridge Four. And you? You might have fancy title and different powers.
He leaned forward.
But I know Bridge Four. And you, Renarin Kholin, are Bridge Four.
Renarin smiled widely.
But Rock, don't you ever worry that you aren't the person everyone thinks you are?
Everyone thinks I am loud, insufferable lout, Lunamore said. So to be something else would not be bad thing.
Renarin chuckled.
You think this about yourself? Lunamore said.
Maybe,
Renarin said, making another perfectly round piece of dough.
I don't know what I am most days, Rock, but I seem to be the only one. Since I could walk, everyone was saying, look how bright he is. He should be an Ardent.
Lunamore grunted. Sometimes, even if you were loud and insufferable, you knew when not to say anything.
Everyone thinks it's so obvious. I have a mind for figures, don't I? Yes, join the Ardents. Of course, nobody says I'm much less of a man than my brother, and nobody points out that it sure would be nice for the succession if the sickly, strange younger brother were safely tucked away in a monastery.
When you say these things, you are almost not bitter,
Lunamore said.
Ah, much practice must have been required.
A lifetime.
Tell me, Lunamore said, why do you wish to be a man who fights Renarin Kholin?
Because it's what my father always wanted, Renarin said immediately. He may not realize it, but it's there, Rock.
Lunamore grunted.
Perhaps this is stupid reason, but it is reason, and I can respect that. But tell me, why do you not want to become Ardent or Storm Warden?
Because everyone assumes I will be, Renarin said, slapping bread down on the heated stones. If I go and do it, I'm giving in to what they all say.
He looked for something to fidget with, and Lunamore tossed him more dough.
I think, Lunamore said, your problem is different than you say. You claim you are not the person everyone thinks you are. Maybe you worry instead that you are that person.
A sickly weakling.
No, Lunamore said, leaning in. You can be you without this being a bad thing. You can admit you act and think differently from your brother, but can learn not to see this as flaw. It is just Renarin Kholin.
Renarin started kneading the dough furiously.
Is good, Lunamore said, that you learn to fight. Men do well learning many different skills, but men also do well using what the gods have given them. in the peaks, a man may not have such choices. His privilege.
I suppose. Gliss says, well, it's complicated. I could talk to the Ardens, but I'm hesitant to do anything that would make me stand out from the other Bridgman Rock. I'm already the oddest one in this bunch.
Is that so?
Don't deny it, Rock. Lopin is, well, Lopin. And you're obviously, you. But I'm still the strange one. I've always been the strangest one.
Lunamore slapped Doe onto a rock, then pointed toward where Relaine, the Parshendi bridgeman they used to call Shen, sat on a rock near his squad, watching quietly as the others laughed at Eth, having accidentally stuck a stone to his hand. He wore war form and so was taller and stronger than he had been before, but the humans seemed to have completely forgotten that he was there.
Oh, Renarin said. I don't know if he counts.
This thing is what everyone always tells him, Lunamore said. Over and over again.
Renarin stared for a long time while Lunamore continued to make bread. Finally, Renarin stood up and dusted off his uniform, walked across the stone plateau, and settled down beside Relaine. Renarin fidgeted and didn't say anything, but Relaine seemed to appreciate the company anyway. Lunamore smiled, then finished the last of the bread. He rose and set up the shiki drink with a stack of wooden cups. He took another drink himself, then shook his head and glanced at Huyo, who was harvesting the bread. The Herdazian man was glowing faintly. Clearly, he'd already learned how to draw in stormlight. Air-sick Herdazian. Lunamore raised a hand, and Huyo tossed him a flatbread, which Lunamore bit. He chewed the warm bread, thoughtful.
More salt in the next batch.
The Herdazian just kept harvesting the bread.
You do think they need more salt, don't you? Lunamore said.
Huyo shrugged.
Add more salt to that batch that I've started mixing, Lunamore said. And do not look so self-satisfied. I may still throw you offside a plateau.
Huyo smiled and kept working. The men soon started coming over for something to drink. They grinned, thumped Lunamore on the back, told him he was a genius. But of course none remembered that he had tried serving them shiki once before. They had mostly left it in the cauldron, opting for beer instead. That day they hadn't been hot, sweaty, and frustrated. Know your enemy. Out here, with the right drink, he was a little god unto himself.
Ha! A god of cool drinks and friendly advice.
Any chef worth his spoons learned to talk because cooking was an art, and art was subjective. One man could love an ice sculpture while another thought it boring. It was the same with food and drink. It did not make the food broken or the person broken to not be liked. He chatted with Leighton, who was still shaken by their experience with the dark god below Uathiru. Powerful god that had been, and very vengeful. There were legends of such things in the peaks. Lunamore's great-great-great-grandfather had met with one while traveling the Third Divide. Excellent and important story, which Lunamore did not share today. He calmed Leighton, commiserated with him. The thick-bodied armorer was a fine man and could talk as loudly as Lunamore sometimes.
Ha! You could hear him two plateaus away, which Lunamore liked. What was the point of a little voice? Weren't voices for being heard?
Leighton went back to his practice, but others had their worries. Scar was the best spearman among them, particularly now that Moash had left, but was feeling self-conscious at not having drawn in Stormlight. Lunamore asked Scar to show him what he'd learned, and, after Scar's instruction, Lunamore actually managed to draw some in himself, to his delight and surprise. Scar left with a spring to his step. Another man would have felt worse, but Scar was a teacher at heart. The short man still hoped that Lunamore would someday choose to fight. He was the only one of the bridgemen who actively spoke out about Lunamore's pacifism. Once the men had been thoroughly watered, Lunamore found himself looking out across the plateaus for some sign of movement in the distance. Well, best to keep busy with the meal. The stew was perfect. He was pleased to have been able to get the crabs. So much of what everyone ate in the tower was of soul-cast grain or meat, neither of which was very appetizing. The flatbread had cooked up nicely, and he'd even been able to concoct a chutney last night. Now he just had to... Lunamore almost stumbled into his own cauldron as he saw what was assembling on the plateau to his left.
Gods. Strong gods, like Silfrenna.
Glowing a faint blue, they clustered around a tall Spren woman who had long hair streaming behind her. She had taken the shape of a person, human-sized, and wore an elegant gown. The others swirled about in the air, though their focus was obviously the practicing bridgemen and hopefuls.
Uma ame tokuma mafaliki,
Lunamore started, hastily making the signs of respect. Then, to be sure, he got down on his knees and bowed. He had never seen so many in one place. Even his occasional meeting with an afaliki in the peaks did not hit him as hard as this. What was the proper offering? He could not give only bows for such a sight as this, but bread and stew? Mafaliki would not want bread and stew.
You, a feminine voice said beside him, are so wonderfully respectful, it borders on being silly.
Lunamore turned to find Silfrenna sitting on the side of his cauldron in her small and girlish shape, legs crossed and hanging over the edge. He made the sign again.
They are your kin? Is this woman at their front your Nuatoma, Ali'i Kamura?
Kind of, maybe, sort of halfway, she said, cocking her head. I can barely remember a voice, her voice, Vendorana, reprimanding me. I got in so much trouble for searching out Kaladin. Yet, here they are. They won't speak to me. I think they assume that if they do, they'd have to admit to me they were wrong.
She leaned forward, grinning.
And they absolutely hate being wrong.
Lunamore nodded solemnly.
You're not as brown as you were, Silfrenna said.
Yes, my tan is fading, Lunamore said. Too much time indoors, Mafaliki.
Humans can change colors?
Some more than others, Lunamore said, holding up his hand. Some from other peaks are pale, like Shin, though my peak has always been more bronze.
You look like somebody washed you way too much, Silfrenna said. They took a scrub brush to you and rubbed your skin off, and that's why your hair is red, because you got so sore.
These are wise words, Lunamore said.
He wasn't sure why yet. He'd have to ponder them. He fished in his pocket for the spheres that he had on him, which weren't many. Still, he arranged each one in its own bowl and then approached the assemblage of Spren. There had to be 24 or more of them.
Kali Kalinda!
The other bridgemen couldn't see the gods, of course. He wasn't sure what Huyo or Haber thought of him walking reverently across the plateau, then bowing himself and arranging the bowls with their spheres as offerings. When he looked up, the Ali'i Kamura, the most important god here, was studying him. She rested her hand over one of the bowls and drew out the stormlight. Then she left, turning into a streak of light and zipping away. The others remained, a mottled collection of clouds, ribbons, people, bunches of leaves, and other natural objects. They flittered overhead, watching the practicing men and women. Silfrenna crossed the air to stand beside Lunamore's head.
They are looking, Lunamore whispered. This thing is happening. Not just bridgemen, not just squires. Radiance, as Kaladin wishes.
We'll see, she said,
then huffed softly before zipping away as a ribbon of light herself. Lunamore left the bowls in case any of the others wished to partake of his offering. At his cook station, he stacked up the flatbread, intending to give the plates to Haber to hold and distribute. Only Haber didn't respond to his request. The lanky man sat on his little stool, leaning forward, his hand in a tight fist that glowed from the gemstone inside. The cups he'd been washing lay in an ignored stack beside him. Haber's mouth moved, whispering, and he stared at that glowing fist in the same way a man might stare at the tinder in his fire pit on a very cold night surrounded by snow. Desperation, determination, prayer.
Do it, Haber, Lunamore thought, stepping forward. Drink it in. Make it yours. Claim it.
Lunamore felt an energy to the air, a moment of focus. Several windspren turned toward Haber, and for a heartbeat, Lunamore thought that everything else faded. Haber became one man alone in a darkened place, fist glowing. He stared unblinking at that sign of power, that sign of redemption. The light in Haber's fist went out.
Ha!
Lunamore shouted.
Ha!
Haber jumped in surprise. His jaw dropped and he stared at the now done gemstone. Then he held up his hand, gawking at the luminescent smoke that rose from it.
Guys!
He called.
Guys! Guys!
Lunamore stepped back as the bridgemen left their stations and came rushing over.
Give him your gemstones, Kaladin called. He's going to need a lot. Pile them up!
Bridgemen scrambled to give Haber their emeralds, and he drew in more and more stormlight. Then the light suddenly dampened.
I can feel them again, Haber cried. I can feel my toes!
He tentatively reached out for support. Drey under one arm, Pete under the other, Haber slipped off his stool and stood up. He grinned with a gap-toothed expression and almost fell over. His legs obviously weren't very strong. Drey and Pete righted him, but he forced them back to let him stand precariously on his own. The men of Bridge Four waited only briefly before pressing in with cries of excitement. Joy spren swirled around the group like a sweeping gust of blue leaves. Amid them, Lopin shoved in close and made the Bridge Four salute. It seemed to mean something special coming from him. Two arms. One of the first times Lopin had been able to make the salute. Haber saluted back, grinning like a boy who just hit his first center shot with the bow. Kaladin stepped up beside Lunamore, Silfrenna on his shoulder.
It will work, Rock. This will protect them.
Lunamore nodded, then by habit checked toward the west as he'd been doing all day. This time he spotted something. It looked like a plume of smoke. Kaladin flew to check it out. Lunamore, along with the rest of them, followed along on the ground, carrying their mobile bridge. Lunamore ran at the center front of the bridge. It smelled of memories. The wood, the stain used to seal it, the sounds of several dozen men grunting and breathing in enclosed spaces, the slapping of feet on plateau. Mixed exhaustion and terror, an assault, arrows flying, men dying. Lunamore had known what might happen when he chose to come down from the peaks with Kefha. No Nuatoma from the peaks had ever yet won a shard blade or shard plate from the Alethi or Vadens they challenged. Still, Kefha had determined the cost was worth the risk. At worst, he had thought he would end up dead, and his family would become servants to a wealthy lowlander. They hadn't anticipated the cruelty of Toral Sadius, who had murdered Kefha without a proper duel, killed many of Lunamore's family who resisted, and seized his property. Lunamore roared, charging forward, and his skin started to glow with the power of the stormlight from his pouch and the spheres he had collected before leaving. He seemed to be carrying the bridge all on his own, towing the others. Scar called out a marching song, and Bridge Four thundered the words. Bridge Four had grown strong enough to carry the bridge long distances without difficulty, but this day put those previous runs to shame. They ran at a sprint the entire distance, vibrant with stormlight, Lunamore calling the commands as Kaladin or Teft had once done. When they reached a chasm, they practically tossed the bridge across. When they picked it up on the other side, it seemed light as a reed. It felt like they'd barely started going before they neared the source of the smoke. A beleaguered caravan crossing the plains. Lunamore threw his weight against the bridge's outer support rods, pushing it across the chasm, then he charged over. Others followed. Dabbit and Lopin unhooked shields and spears from the side of the bridge and tossed one to each bridgeman as they passed. They fell into squads, and the men who normally followed Teft fell in behind Lunamore, though he had, of course, refused the spear Lopan tried to toss him. Many of the caravan wagons had been transporting lumber from the forests outside the war camps, though some were piled high with furniture. Dalinar Kolin spoke of repopulating his war camp, but the two high princes who remained behind had been encroaching on the land, quietly, like eels. For now, it was best to scavenge what they could and bring it to Yuvithiru. The caravan had been using Dalinar's large wheeled bridges to cross chasms. Lunamore passed one of these, lying on its side, broken. Three of the large lumber wagons near it had been set afire, making the air acrid with smoke. Caladan floated overhead, holding his brilliant shard spear. Lunamore squinted through the smoke in the direction Caladan was looking and made out figures streaking away through the sky.
"Voidbringer attack," Drahi muttered. "We should have guessed they'd start raiding our caravans."
Lunamore didn't care at the moment. He pushed his way through weary caravan guards and frightened merchants hiding under wagons. There were bodies everywhere. The Voidbringers had killed dozens. Lunamore searched through the mess, trembling. Was that red hair on a corpse? No, that was blood soaking a headscarf. And that other body wasn't human. It had marbled skin. A brilliant white arrow stuck from its back, fletched with goose feathers. An Unkalaki arrow. Lunamore looked to the right, where someone had piled up furniture in a heap almost like a fortification. A head poked up over the top, a stout woman with a round face and a deep red braid. She stood up tall and raised a bow toward Lunamore. Other faces peeked out from behind the furniture. Two youths, a boy and a girl, both around 16. Younger faces from there, 6 in total. Lunamore dashed toward them and found himself blubbering, tears streaming down his cheeks as he crawled up the outside of their improvised fortification. His family, at long last, had arrived at the shattered plains.
"This is Song,"
Lunamore said, pulling the woman close, one arm around her shoulders.
"His best woman in all the peaks. Ha! We made snow forts as childs, and hers was always best. I should have known to find her in castle, even if it was made of old chairs."
"Snow?" Lopan asked. "How do you make forts out of snow? I've heard all about this stuff. It's like frost, right?"
"Air sick lowlander."
Lunamore shook his head, moving to the twins. He put one hand on each of their shoulders.
"Boy is gift. Girl is cord.
Ah!
When I left, gift was short like scar. Now he is nearly my height."
He struggled to keep the pain from his voice. It had been almost a year. So long. Originally, his intent had been to bring them as soon as possible. But then everything had gone wrong. Sadius, the bridge crews.
"Next son is rock, but not same kind of rock as me. This is, smaller rock. Third son is star. Second daughter is Kumatiki. It's kind of shell. You do not have him here. Last daughter is another song. Beautiful song."
He stooped down beside her, smiling. She was only 4, and she shied away from him. She didn't remember her father. It broke his heart. Song, Tuokalina Kalminor, put her hand on his back. Nearby, Caladan introduced Bridge 4, but only Gift and Cord had been taught Lowlander languages, and Cord spoke only Vaden. Gift managed a passable greeting in Alethi. Little Song sought her mother's legs. Lunamore blinked away tears, though they were not completely sad tears. His family was here. His first saved wages had paid for the message, sent by Spanreed to the Peak's message station. That station was still a week's travel from his home, and from there, traveling down from the slopes and crossing Alethkar took months. Around them, the caravan was finally limping into motion. This was the first chance Lunamore had found to introduce his family, as Bridge 4 had spent the last half hour trying to help the wounded. Then, Renarin had arrived with Adolin and 2 companies of troops. And for all Renarin's worries about not being useful, His healing had saved several lives. Tuaca rubbed Lunamore's back, then knelt down beside him, pulling their daughter close with one arm, Lunamore with the other.
"It was a long journey," she said in Ukalaki, "and longest at the end, when those things came from the sky."
"I should have come to the war camps," Lunamore said, "to escort you."
"We're here now," she said. "Lunamore, what happened? Your note was so terse. Kepha is dead? But what happened to you? Why so long without word?"
He bowed his head. How could he explain this? The bridge runs, the cracks in his soul. How could he explain that the man she'd always said was so strong had wished to die, had been a coward, had given up near the end?
"What of Tifi and Sinakua?" she asked him.
"Dead," he whispered. "They raised weapons in vengeance."
She put her hand to her lips. She wore a glove on her safe hand in deference to silly Boran traditions.
"Then you—"
"I am a chef now," Lunamore said, firm.
"But I cook,
Tuaca."
He pulled her close again.
"Come, let us take the children to safety. We will reach the tower, which you will like. It is like the peaks, almost. I will tell you stories. Some are painful."
"Very well. Lunamore, I have stories too. The peaks are home. Something is wrong. Very wrong."
He pulled back and met her eyes. They'd call her dark-eyed down here, though he found infinite depth, beauty, and light in those deep brown-green eyes.
"I will explain when we are safe," she promised,
picking up little beautiful song.
"You are wise to usher us forward, wise as ever."
"No, my love," he whispered, "I am a fool. I would blame the air, but I was a fool above too. A fool to ever let Kepha leave on this errand of stupidity."
She walked the children across the bridge. He watched and was glad to hear Unkalaki again, a proper language. Glad that the other men did not speak it. For if they did, they might have picked out the lies that he had told them. Kaladin stepped up, clapping him on the shoulder. "I'm going to assign your family my rooms, Rock. I've been slow in getting family quarters for the bridgemen. This will light a fire under me. I'll get us an assignment, and until then I'll bunk with the rest of the men." Lunamore opened his mouth to object, then thought better of it. Some days the more honorable thing was to take a gift without complaint.
"Thank you," he said, "for the rooms. For other things, my captain."
"Go walk with your family, Rock. We can handle the bridge without you today. We have Stormlight." Lunamore rested his fingers on the smooth wood.
"No," he said. "It will be a privilege to carry him one last time. For my family."
"One last time?" Kaladin said.
"We take to the skies, storm-blessed," Lunamore said. "We will walk no more in coming days. This is the end."
He looked back toward a subdued Bridge Four group who seemed to sense that what he said was true.
"Ah, do not look so sad. I left Great Stew back near city. Haber will probably not ruin it before we return. Come, pick up our bridge. The last time, we marched not toward death, but toward full stomachs and good songs."
Despite his urging, it was a solemn, respectful group who lifted the bridge. They were slaves no longer. Storms in their pockets, they carried riches. It glowed fiercely, and soon their skin did as well. Kaladin took his place at the front. Together they carried the bridge on one final run, reverently, as if it were the bier of a king being taken to his tomb for his eternal rest.